Guys, welcome to another Mama Making a Movie podcast. Adam here. Hope everyone is keeping safe out there. This is what we've got for you guys today. We're back with more trailers. We've got the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows of Sandra Bullock's career, including the infamous Speed 2, which I think will be a lot of fun to do today. We'll review our movie picks from the last episode, which I suspect will include a scathing review of The Passion of the Christ from Hogan. Then we'll have a new feature, our Seal of a Cruel movie, that we will talk a bit more about later. Looking forward to that. We'll dive into our murder mystery movie, which we are creating, and finally some juicy picks for each other for next week. Some spoilers to follow, but we'll give notice this time, I promise. I'll jump straight over to my stable mates, Gogan and Fergus.
Gogan.
Trailer I've gone for this week is a movie called Son of the South. Was meant to be released in August of last year. However, obviously due to coronavirus messing everything around, the release date has been pushed back to 2021. Don't have official one yet. Going to give a quick synopsis here. So a grandson of a Klansman comes of age in the Deep South and eventually joins the civil rights movement. Based on Bob Zellner's autobiography, The Wrong Side of Murder Creek. Trailer itself looks quite good. One issue I kind of have is it's one of those trailers, if you watch it from start to finish, I feel like you've really seen the majority of the movie. You kind of know where this is going to go. The runtime itself is 105 minutes. So I'm kind of like, well, you've seen a lot of big events in the trailer. Is there going to be anything left for the actual movie when it comes out? So I like the look of it, but overall, I don't like those trailers that give too much away. And I think that's it's a fault of more recent trailers as well. I don't know if you guys got a chance to check the trailer out, have you?
Yeah, I watch it. And like, I suppose I have a few points on it. This might sound a bit bad, but like, yeah, it's this one might be a little bit different to other ones because it's based off like actual events. Maybe other ones aren't. But how many films like in the last like 3-4 years, like they're flogging a dead horse. I feel like, I mean, the Judas and the Black Messiah is coming out, which is going to be great. But I don't know. It's all kind of bombardment at the moment, and it's like these films are going to be great. There's just so many. I don't know. Like, and this one itself as well, compared to say like something like Judas and the Black Messiah. I know it's a bit later on in time, and it's to do with civil rights and that kind of stuff. It looks a bit cheap. There's other films like one springing to mind, like with the civil rights movement, Mississippi Burning, unbelievable film. There's a Martin Luther King film. I can't remember the name of it.
Selma.
Oh yeah, Selma's brilliant. This one, in comparison to other ones that I've seen, it looks cheap. I don't know if that was just me, but it looks like low production value. I looked on IMDb, and it's kind of given it a preemptive 8.2. I don't think that's going to go that high. Like you were saying, Gogan, you think you see a lot of it, you know, the substance of what it is in the trailer itself. And I'm like, it just seems like, I know it's based on someone's actual kind of memoir and stuff that actually happened, but it just seems like a lot of money was thrown into this idea, and it kind of cheapens it in a way. It, like, when you make a film like this, it needs to be hard-hitting, and this looks a little bit too polished, a little bit too Hollywood for my liking.
To be honest, one of the points I have down here is, like, I compare this to a Mississippi Burning. Mm. And I'd rather just go back and watch that again. It really hits to the core. I feel like this might just kind of shy away from big incidents. Like, I know what it's set out highlight, but I feel like it might not highlight it enough. And look, that's just gone by the trailer, you know? Like, I could be completely wrong, but...
This is the thing, I could be completely wrong as well. You're right. Like, this could be amazing. But to me, the acting looks a little hammy in parts. The production values look a little cheap. And it looks like they just took a real story and just pumped a lot of money behind it. I don't like the modern music in it, in the trailer. And it seems like a kind of cheap attempt at portraying something that's a real hard-hitting, fact-based story. Do you know what I mean? When you go for it, you have to go for it. You can't half-ass it. And, I know it sounds bad, but these were really, really rough and harsh times for people. And it needs to be portrayed correctly.
You're right. And I think, are they kind of just making a movie to try and make a quick buck off this topic?
There's an unbelievable story behind it, but you have to do it right. You have to do it. Like, but I don't feel it's doing a true story justice by looking at the trailer. Yeah. It seems like I said, it was just a load of money thrown behind it. God, it'll do well because of what it is. You need to do it justice. It's quite clearly quite a harrowing story about what it's about. What do you think, Butler? Sorry, we've been rambling on for a while.
No, you're fine. I was enjoying listening to the back and forth. Yeah, I agree with both you there. I think it's a very much a Hollywood take on that type of story. Like, even in the trailer, they've got the inspirational kind of spiritual church religious black music in it, and then they have the guy says at the end of the trailer, you know, like the Klansman's like, I suppose you guys are supposed to be non-violent. He's like, well, I'm getting closer to like violence, and it looks yeah, like a very cheeky take. And I suppose the other way you can look at it as well, I know it's kind of like inspired by a true story, but there's this thing in Hollywood, and I don't totally agree with this, but it's an interesting point about like white savior movies like Dances with Wolves or The Last Samurai, like an intelligent white man is put into a situation with colored people and basically gets them to work together and basically those people would have struggled without the white guy coming to save the day. And that's sort of what I got from this trailer, like in 2021 with everything going on, how do I need a white person's take on African-American civil rights movement? It just seems like a strange thing. Yeah. And in the trailer, it looks like he's gathering everyone and marching them forward. And it's like, you know, yeah, there were white people that went and helped and marched to Selma and stuff like in the movie, but they're not like front and center, you know? Yeah, so it just seemed like a bit of an odd climate to do something like that.
No, I completely agree with you. I think, to be honest with you, I think it looks like a lot of shit. Again, we've only seen the trailer, but like, I give it a low score. I don't know what the IMDb score is coming out for because it hasn't got released yet. That could be maybe pre-screening for critics. I don't know. But generally, we, as you might know, by listening to this, if you listen to this before, we go off Rotten Tomatoes. And this is quite a serious conversation we're having. This is usually quite a lighthearted podcast. But I just feel, I don't know. What give me a rating, Gogan. I know 8.2 is on IMDb, but give us a rating of what you think it might be when it comes out. And do we have a release date? No,
we don't have a specific release date. To be honest, I've gone 6.5 here. I just feel, you know, you take into account everything that we've said, we've highlighted multiple issues with it. I just feel like it's not going to deliver the message it needs to deliver. And I think it will just fall. And yeah, so I'm going 6.5.
I think that's a fair kind of, but you know, I think it might go as high as a 7.
I'd give it a 4.5, but I think it's going to come in at a 6.5. I take a hard pass. Are you going to watch this guy when it comes out? Or?
Depending on when it comes out. Like if it comes out within the next 2 to 3 months, yeah. If it's a summer release, I'll probably forget about it. You know, we've bigger movies coming out that we've already discussed that highlights the same issue. So I'd be going to see it then before I'd go to see this.
Well, look, we'll move on. Yeah, a resounding middling from the three of us, I feel. Butler, what's your trailer?
My trailer is Agatha Christie's Death on the Nile. I think it was originally supposed to come out last October, has been rescheduled for nearly like a full year later to September 17th this year. So I got pushed back a good bit.
Oh, it's coming out my birthday.
Oh, well, there you go. Happy birthday. Look, it looks like a solid trailer. A lot of sexy people up to no good in Egypt. I mean, and I loved the Murder on the Orient Express remake Ken Branagh did a couple of years ago. I think it's very stylish, very nicely done. He does a good Poirot. The rough premise for this one is the peace and tranquility that was temporarily existent on the SS Karnak is destroyed after one of the passengers is found murdered. Renowned Belgian detective Hercule Poirot is entrusted with the important task of identifying which one of the passengers is the killer before they strike again. The cast is Kenneth Branagh, Tom Bateman, Annette Bening, Russell Brand, who's could be on a bit of a comeback, Don French, Gal Gadot, Armie Hammer, and a few others that I don't know. I'm looking forward to it because the reason I like Murder on the Orient Express, but the only thing that hampered it for me is I knew the plot. I don't know the plot to Death on the Nile. So I can go in with I wonder who the killer is and try and figure out along the way. So I'm very much looking forward to it. I was saying, Kenneth Branagh is a very good Poirot. My personal favourite is Albert Finney, but I looked up earlier a few people along the years I've played Poirot, and I've got a few surprising ones. So Tony Randall, Peter Ustinov, Ian Holm, Dr. Octopus himself, Alfred Molina, Orson Welles, David Suchet, who does the kind of the TV one, and then John Malkovich did Poirot as well. I'm looking forward to it. It's right up my alley. You guys watched the trailer as well, did you? What do you think of it, Gogan?
Yeah, I saw this and I was like, oh, yes, because I really did like the Murder on the Orient Express. I thought it was really well done. He's very good Poirot as well. And hopefully when we can go to see these movies again, it's a good one that you can just sit back, relax, and kind of go into detective mode. Who's it going to be, you know? I'm excited for it. I think it's a good trailer. Doesn't give too much away either.
I think it looks good, and it's good. It's a good trailer. It's got a lot of intrigue, and it's got kind of a catchy song.
But I'm interested to see what Ferg thinks of it.
Yeah, Death on the Nile. I watched the trailer, and you said something about it, but there's a lot of beautiful people in it, which you're completely right. There is a lot of beautiful people in it. Great star-studded cast. Kenneth Branagh as well is like, I don't know how to take him. I'm like, are you amazing or are you hammy? I don't know. I'd love to do a piece on Kenneth Branagh alone. Like, obviously, going, you saw him in Tenet, where he's the Russian mob boss.
Very good.
But I don't know about Death on an Isle of Butter, to be honest with you. And it, like you two are saying, like, you're looking forward to it. I didn't love A Murder on the Orient Express. I had massive high hopes for it. Like, it looked brilliant. I love the whole murder mystery genre. I love the idea of it. I was like, this looks like it could be great. And I was very underwhelmed.
Because have you seen any of the old Murder on the Orient Express that you know the general plot? Because I mean, it's a different, you have to judge it differently if you kind of know the story.
I know you judge it differently, but I don't know. Maybe I just had really high hopes for it because I even love Poirot, the TV show. I don't know. Look, I'm open-minded. The trailer, I didn't love. It just looks like a puff piece to me. I don't know. And I could see your face. You look like I just punched a small puppy in the face. Look, I know you love these films, especially Butler, but like, I just remember watching Murder on the Orient Express, and maybe because I had massive hopes for it, but I was completely underwhelmed. So I don't know if I'm ready to be hurt again. Maybe that's my point.
That's interesting because me and Butler were full on praising it. So look, go back to Butler. Butler, what would your rating be?
I think when it comes out and stuff, I think it'll wind up being on Rotten Tomatoes is like a 70-odd. But I think it'll be one that the critics will go, it's visually nice, it's well-acted, but because you're going off such well-known source material, you can't really push the boundaries past like an 8% or so.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Just trying to look up what Murder on the Orient Express gets on Rotten Tomatoes because...
I was going to ask that, actually.
It's a 60%. Very interesting. I'm really looking forward to it, but when it comes to how it might fare on Rotten Tomatoes, I'll probably go 65%. I'm worried about what Ferg is going to say next because...
really quickly, I bring it back to Murder in the Orient Express. Like, it fell flat for me and I was bored during the film and I was like... Some of the characters were just silly. I don't know. Going on what it has in Rotten Tomatoes, I would say it's going to come out at anywhere from a 60 to 65. What Butler said there about, like, you know, oh, it can't go higher because of its source material, I actually disagree in a way because I actually think you have a better chance of making a good film if you can stay true enough to the source material and you can just get it right. Get the nice mix of kind of your own touch with staying with the source material. You're on to a winner. But I feel like this is going to be like Murder on the Orient Express, where it goes too big, too flashy, and it's going to be bad. I actually preferred Knives Out as a kind of a murder mystery film. It came out, I think, relatively near to Murder on the Orient Express, and I thought Knives Out was much better. So I'm going to say it's 60.
Yes, but I think, like, what I mean, like, the source material is, like, it's a book that came out in, like, 1937. Mm. It's, like, has a plot, and it goes from A to B. So, I mean, right now in 2021, it's hard to, like, churn out a book. Even like a critically acclaimed book. Like, if they remade The Grapes of Wrath now or something, or Mice and Men, I don't think you'd be getting, like, 90%, because it's just, everyone knows the story, and it's, been done and done and done and done and done. So I just think it's hard to, maybe the exception is like, I didn't like Little Women last year, I suppose, that kind of pushed the boat, but they took a very original take on it. So it can be done. Well, for them to do that, they actually kind of didn't do the same standard that has been done.
Look, I mean, I'm not going to shit all over it totally, because look, in my heart, I wanted to be good, because I wanted Murder in the Orient Express to be good. And I knew that it was going to be a series of films. So I was like, if this can be good, we're on for a few crackers here. Do you know what I mean? And like, you know, it's never going to be an Oscar-worthy film, but it was always going to be a fun film. And if they could do it right, they did it right. But I don't know. I just found it like entirely forgettable, in my opinion. So, as I said, 60%. I feel like this is going to be entirely forgettable. Like, it's going to fade into obscurity like the first film did, in my opinion.
Look, let's get on to your film first. Your precious,
Oh, look, hold on. Don't shit all over it because it's just my film. I'll give an honest opinion in this one as well. But look, Palmer is my film. Palmer is actually coming out, I believe, the 29th of this month. So, you know, it's coming relatively soon. To Apple TV, if you don't have Apple TV, I'm sure it will be available on different streaming services eventually. You know, it'll get there. Maybe it might come out on the TV at some stage. If you do have Apple TV, if you don't, unfortunately, it's only coming out on Apple TV for now. It's like Netflix. It's an Apple original film. Really, really short synopsis that IMDb had was an ex-convict strikes up a friendship with a boy from a troubled home, which I think is so glosses over what the story is. It doesn't really do justice to what the trailer is in any way, shape or form, in my opinion. I think it looks great. Justin Timberlake plays like an ex-con. His name Palmer. He used to live in this small town in the south. Gets out of prison. Seems like he was this kind of, you know, high school football star. You know, everyone used to love him. Everyone knows who he is. And he makes his way back as an adult after getting out of prison. I love that kind of stuff, though. It's like, you know, it's like Friday Night Lights. You know, like football, high school football is the biggest thing ever. You're the coolest person in the town. But if you don't have anything, if you don't become a professional football player, 90% of the time, you end up a nobody. And then that's like you're reliving your glory days of when you were 18, 19. And this is what kind of it seems like. And, you know, he plays the kind of part really well in the trailer. The kid in it is, look, it's alluding to the fact that he's gay or LGBTQ plus. And it's in a southern town. His mother leaves. Justin Timberlake has to start looking after him. Obviously, just stop being weird. You know, like he's watching, like he's wearing like dresses and he's watching like kind of girly shows. And even Justin Timberlake's like, you're going to get beaten up for that. The trailer looks really genuine. Like, remember we were talking about the film you're watching, your trailer going, and you're like, it looks disingenuous. It looks like maybe this looks very genuine because you've got scenes in it where he's like, you know, the kid's crying, he's getting hauled off in a police car because he's broken his bail, because he's beating someone up because they're trying to rape someone. It looks intense, like, it doesn't look like a fluff piece. And usually I'm very like, you have to get the kid in a movie right. The kid in this looks fabulously cast. If anyone is going to go for an award, it could be this kid. He sells the kind of genuine emotion in it. You could get this film totally wrong. Do you know what I mean? You could be like, it's supposed to have this kind of message, and you're like, ugh. All right, pack it in. But this, I don't know. This seems very genuine, I feel. Well, like, you watched it, Butler. What do you think?
I think Justin Timberlake's great. Anyone seen Alpha Dog, or if you haven't seen it, watch it. He's great in it. Yeah, but I'm not disagreeing with you because you shit on Death of the Nile. But I think trailer has a similar thing to Gogan's one, where Gogan's one's kind of played for, like, you know, emotion. This is kind of played for tears, I think. And I think there's so much stacked in this trailer being like, this is going to be a crime part, this is going to be a crime part. And there's like, as saying similar to Son of the South, there's a million films like this where like the adult who is kind of like an outcast in society forms a bond with a child, and the child teaches him more than he teaches the child. And, you know,
it's done a million times.
So I think, you know, maybe the only original thing in it, as you were saying, is I think the child in a possibly trans, or as you're saying, LGBTQ plus. So I think that has a bit of an original aspect to it. But yeah, I don't know. I think I feel like I've already seen this film without seeing it, if you do get me. Gogan, what do you think?
I would agree with Butler a bit more there. I feel like this movie has been done before. The trailer itself, thought it was good. I kind of felt like after finishing, I was like, I don't really want to see that because I feel like that it's just going to be a very, very slow movie. Now, it could be a slow movie and could be a fantastic movie at the same time. I have to be really into a movie if it's going to be it'd be a slow one. Now, I think Justin Timberlake looks great in it, and I feel like he could be,
you
know, he could launch his career again in terms of how well he gets on in this. I would agree with Butler a bit more.
In terms of where it could hit, I want to say as high as an 80% on Rotten Tomatoes. Realistic, maybe about a 75, 78.
I feel like it could go quite high. I don't know if I'd go as high as 75. I'd probably drop it to about 70.
And I'll give it a 68.
It's a hard one to gauge because, like I said, Buller, it's been done to death. Could it be the one in every 20 that they do that actually turns out to be a good film? Or is it going to try and play into those cliches a little bit too much and have fuck all actual character development? We'll see. But look, we'll move on to our next segment. Buller, if you want to introduce our next segment, what are we talking about?
So our next segment is our Actor of the Week, where we discuss the highs of the highs and the lows of the lows of a selected actor or actress. This week, we have Sandra Bullock, which is great for a couple of reasons. Firstly, she's a great actress. And secondly, it makes us less look like a drunken fraternity because we've been doing actors, men, for the last couple of weeks. We've all seen her best and we've seen her worst, but we decided to rewatch her worst today just to get it fresh in the brain. It's Speed 2 Cruise Control, and we've got so much to talk about on this. We've been fraught at the mouth all day to kind of get this one out because it's just such a wildly bad film. And I'm going to pass it over to Fergus. We've all got so many points on this, but Fergus, if you want to just take it and run with this Speed 2 Cruise Control, what do you think?
Oh, it's one of those. So firstly, like, I mean, the mob spoke. We put this up on Instagram and you know, there was a couple of choices, but everyone went with Sandra Bullock. And as Butler said, you know, look, we haven't done an actress yet. And look, great, though, because she's got this illustrious long career that we'll get into. But starting with the lowest of the low, which was rated at 4% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I think it's like a 3.9 on IMDb, and it's rare that they both like agree, if that makes sense, like agree to that, like degree. But I'll give you a quick synopsis. A computer hacker breaks into the computer system of the Seabourn Legend cruise liner and sets it speeding on a collision course into a gigantic oil tanker. There's my first problem with it, right? Sets it speeding. This could have been a film by itself, first of all. In my opinion, it has to go down as one of the worst sequels to a film, potentially ever. Speed, which has Sandra Bullock, is brilliant. It's a simple idea. There's a terrorist. There's a bomb in the bus. It can't slow down. Great. This is just the example of the movie did so well. There was so much money made that the director decided to fucking just go hell for leather. It's the same director. He's just like, no, let's make it bigger. Let's make it better. And the best budget. Thing about it, the massive budget, but the best thing about this film is that the whole film is based on a recurring nightmare that Jan de Bont, who's the director, had. Jan de Bont had a recurring nightmare about a cruise liner crashing into an island. And he decided, I'm going to make that the sequel to Speed 2. What a fucking stupid idea that was. Like, it has nothing, apart from Sandra Bullock being in it, it has nothing to do with the first film. I mean, like, the opening scene alone, first of all, Jason Patrick, terrible actor. The only good thing I've ever seen him is The Lost Boys. I didn't.
He's more forehead than he's man. More, well.
Yeah, 100%. Five head, six head even. My God. Like, I don't know. I don't know if he was, like, bottom of the barrel list. I was like, Jesus, who can we get? Jason Patrick. What the hell? Oh, he was in The Lost Boys. Oh, he'll deal.
I read like a few people that were in consideration for it earlier, and it was pretty much every 90s person you could think of, they even asked John Bon Jovi and Matthew McConaughey before Jason Patrick. Now, Matthew McConaughey obviously turned it down, but John Bon Jovi even said no before they passed
him. The man's
over.
A fucking... I've never seen him in a film in his life. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, like this is the thing, like, you know, okay, don't get me wrong, before I say this, I love Keanu Reeves. I love him. I love his films, but
it's amazing that they found an actor who has less on-screen charisma than Keanu Reeves. Like, less of a personality. It's like, how can we make this main character more wooden? I know. Well, obviously, they didn't know because they had to. They obviously, like, this film won't get made if you don't hire someone. But look, the opening scene is hilarious because it doesn't explain anything. There's two kind of scenes happening at once. Jason Patrick's on his motorbike for some reason, chasing down a fucking ice cream truck. And he's chasing him up this mountain. And for some reason, there's a barricade waiting up the top of the Hollywood Hills for this ice cream van. And I'm like, how did you know he was going that way? Is Jason Patrick trying to lead him there on his motorbike? I don't understand. Never explained it. It just kind of cut into that scene. She's doing a driving test at the same time. Ends up at the same scene where he kind of like crashes off the side of a cliff and he like, first of all, your man would have died. They roll out and Jason Patrick's able to get out. It was good and go, oh, you're under arrest. Terrible. Didn't explain anything. They said he stole some sort of mainframe microchip thing and that was it. Flimsy from the get-go. You thought the same, Gogan. You were watching it today.
It's just so bad because, like, again, you compare it to the original Speed, and the opening to the original Speed is one of my favorite openings because it's just brilliant. It's a SWAT team going in. The bad guy is fucking excellent. Where this is just like, what's going on? Oh, there's so much wrong with it. And it's just
when he interacts with Sandra Bullock, she ends up somehow finishing her driving test. But she had like four police cars behind her. It's like clearly a normal person would have pulled over to one police car after causing so much havoc. She's four police cars, drives up all the way up the Hollywood Hills again. And like she ends up beside him and she's like disgusted that he's just caught this, I don't know, terrorist, is he? And ice cream, man. Ice cream man, you know what I mean? Maybe he's like, I'm all out of chalk ices, you bastard. Get him, fellas. But like, fucking, like, and then she's like, I thought you were on the beach. And I was like, where's this going? What do you mean the beach? And then it explains it later on that he was supposed to be like a beach cop. He lied to her and said, I'm on a beach, you know, busting fucking pickpockets, but I'm actually this special branch guy. I don't know. Baller.
I only noticed this today. And I was just thinking, what a fucking terrible title for a movie. Cruise Control. Cruise Control implies relaxation. And, you know, it doesn't, like, you know, speed. Like, you want something that's like, I wrote down like a couple of terrible titles, something better than Cruise Control. Turbocharged, Fully Loaded, Speed 2, The Speedening. Any of those would have been much better than Cruise Control. Like, I mean, it's not even a function that's specific for a boat. You know, you have cruise control in cars. So what the fuck is the point of calling the cruise control? Like, okay, they're on a cruise. But great, say cruise out of control. Anything else, it's a terrible title.
That would
I mean, one thing I want to say is Roger Ebert gave this film a really good review. This is a good review, except Sandra Bullock ruins it. I was like, Roger Ebert, I mean, you're so wrong about that. She's the only good thing about the movie. And whoa, like, she is an Oscar and you're dead now. So who's won in the long run, really, Roger?
I said the exact same thing. And that infuriated me. Infuriated me. And it was this comment. I was like, you sound like a fucking old-fashioned sexist bastard. Like, there was a lot of hammy acting in that, including Jason Patrick. This is his exact quote. Robert Ebert called it a truly rousing ocean liner adventure. The story was only weakened by Bullock's acting. What a bunch of bullshit. She was one of the better actors in the film. Like, there was nothing wrong with her performance.
No, she does kind of quirky well, and she's more, I think she's slightly less damsel in distress in the first Speed in this.
Yeah, she actually does some shit. She cuts open the door with a fucking chainsaw and whatnot. Like, I don't know.
But I would like to highlight some good points in the movie, though. Like, the extras, I think, deserve a shout out because there's some fantastic extras in Speed 2. Maurice, who makes an appearance at the end, who originally features in Speed, the original Speed.
Is that the guy with he steals his boat at the end?
Yeah, he's the guy that Keanu Reeves steals the car on the motorway.
Yeah.
And he was like, I have to go to therapy for you guys. And I was like, oh, I love this guy. This guy is just great. And his little girlfriend in the boat as well, fantastic. Harvey, the big actor. I want to know why she's not taking any clothes off. But my favourite extra has to be Brian McCarty, who has a fantastic name in the movie. Merced, I think his name is. M-E-R-C-E-D. They decided to let him keep the Scottish accent, which I think adds to the overall of his character. And it reminds me of the guy in Star Trek. I can't do it, Captain. I can't do it.
Scotty.
And I was just like... And it's just great because even the scene where the cruise liner is crashing into the island and he's counting down the knots.
Oh my God. I thought that was Trey standing there and he has his hands on the controls and it sounds like he's coming in his trousers. He's like,
four knots.
And he's like shaking and it's like, three, nearly at the station. Like, it looked like he was enjoying it a little bit too much.
He was a highlight of the movie for me. Just so, like, so over the top. I do want to give a shout-out to Willem Dafoe. He's one of my top actors. Love him. Always wanted him to be a bad guy in a Bond movie. Hopefully this doesn't ruin his chances. Plays off the kind of creepy guy quite well. But one point I wanted to make, and it was only after watching it again today, how slow does it take for him to get away from the cruise line? He escapes to Sandra Bullock at least 15 to 20 minutes before they hit the island. Like,
I have a major gripe with that. First of all, right, he's escaping with Sandra Bullock, and obviously maybe like, oh, it's my insurance policy. She like disengages him from the boat because it's like two jet skis that control the boat. At that stage, why wasn't he like, I don't need her. This is my chance to get away. I've got a bag full of diamonds and a fucking and seaplane. Cash. Yeah, and seaplane over there. And he goes back to get her, brings her in the plane. There was absolutely no need to go back and get her. I have that in my notes. It's like, what was he doing? He could have got away. There's a fucking ship about to crash into an island. Everyone was way too busy to catch him. What was he doing? Way too busy. And then he goes back, like, no, I need her. It was like some kind of reverse Stockholm syndrome. No, she's a good looking woman, but come on.
It's just the whole scene of them crashing into the island, I think could have just been cut from the movie.
Well, I tell you what, right? There's a massive thing to do with that. As I said, the whole film was based off the director's dream about the boat crashing into this island. And it's funny that you mentioned money as well, because I was like, why did they give him like his dying wish? He does this kind of weird Joker laugh and then he gets to blow up the ship. Now everyone's already off it. Whatever, but it's like, look, you know, he's tried very hard. Give him his bit. Let him die in peace, even though he's a terrorist. But the end scene, and look, spoiler alert, the boat crashes into an island. the director was adamant about that happening. Now, I looked it up, right, and in 1997, I feel the film was?
97, yeah.
It would have cost, they gauged how much it would have cost to CGI the whole thing, which would have looked awful. It would have cost around $500 million just to CGI that one bit. And it's a 30-second clip to a minute of the boat crashing into the dock. So what they did was they spent a quarter of the budget, which is $25 million, building one-third of the ship into scale. So they built the front end and a third of the ship. And then they actually built where it crashed into. They had people build 35 houses for it to crash into. It's built on a jetty for it to crash in. So that all that's actually real. That's actually like a third of a ship. The rest of the ship was put in at the end when you see the full ship. That's put in with CGI. It costs like significantly less. But he spent so much money and so much time building this fucking a third of a cruise liner to crash into fake houses. Now, it was probably one of the better parts of the film because it did look great. What I found funny was there was one guy in this little, like, everyone's running away and, I'm sorry, look up. He's driving this little red truck and then he just drives across where the cruise liner is coming and he's like, and he just gets like completely crushed and I was like, wow, that guy's dead. And it's never spoken of.
I want to touch on real quick how bad the dialogue is in the film. And there's one line that I think is an absolute clanger. It's when Sandra Bullock and Jason Patrick are having dinner with the other people on the ship. And the other couple are implying, like, you know, ooh, are you guys going to have a baby? And Sandra Bullock says, Oh, kids are on the menu. Depends who's ordering. As if to say, like, obviously, well, all I kept thinking was, fucking, probably Jason Patrick is probably ordering kids on the menu. How creepy is his relationship with that deaf girl? Because he's not, he's properly staring at her at times.
Massively.
And then there's a time where she's walking behind him and he looks and he says hi, which is fine, that's enough. But then he looks back and she takes off her jacket to kind of reveal her dress. And the camera pans up and down because it's Jason Patrick's point of view. And so that's like he's checking out this girl. And then he kind of like,
I thought it was creepy.
Like you were saying, like, she's like, oh, I'm going to be 15 next year. And he's like, oh, all relationships in like traumatic situations, you know, never work out. It's like, I'm not hearing a no there, Jason. You know?
It was just a weird thing to put in because it's not like, okay, look, I understand maybe, you know, like the whole, you know, cliche in a film of, you know, a girl fancying this man and she's like, it's the first boy she's ever liked and she doesn't realize that that's a completely out of reach and it's like a running gag through films or whatever. But he engages her. She didn't look across and see him. He stared at her until she noticed and then starts fucking sign language and shit at her. And
he's like, really jump in.
And he's like, I really want to learn another language. And that's his point. It's like, all right, okay. And then he's like,
I think,
what?
Sorry, Frank. I just think you sir, are jumping a bit off in this one. Like, all right, he's a bad actor, but let's not make him out to be too much of a creep as well.
No, I just thought it was a weird thing.
I think he sees her speaking sign language to the parents, and he's like, well, oh, I speak sign language, and she's getting given out too, so I'll just be nice and say something nice to her in sign language. And he gets to show Sandra Bullock that he, you know, he speaks sign language, and she's gonna be like, "Oh my god, this guy's amazing." So that's my side of it.
I just think it was a weird thing to put in a film. I think it wasn't needed, and I understand that maybe like she was like, "Oh yeah, my daughter's still on the ship, and you need to rescue her," and blah blah blah. But I think it was just such a fucking gratuitous thing to put in. It was dumb. It was stupid. And then like you said this to me, Butler, where like she's like dancing along to the music and like her parents are like stop, and like I was just saying it's like, you know, it's like you're deaf, you can't hear the music, you look like an idiot, stop dancing. And he's like hitting her away, like to make the parents have to be like massively abusive, like he's really ashamed to have a deaf daughter, like
not even yeah, a deaf woman, deaf daughter that can't dance. I mean that's the worst combination.
She's got no rhythm. Look, I love ridiculous action films, but there's a limit for me where it's like this is trying to be a really good film and it's just really bad and the dialogue is too bad and it's too nonsensical. And like, say like, for example, like I love like the technology in 90s action films. Like I need my golf clubs and like his golf bag, the head of the golf clubs are like the fucking, the detonators. And then the golf balls, which are fucking huge, first of all, and have a massive hole in them. If anyone actually inspected that bag, they'd be like, what the fuck is up with these golf balls? First of all, they're massive. They're like tennis ball size. And it bears to think, how easy would it be to hijack a fucking cruise liner?
It's only one way to find out.
Yeah, let's do it. Get the golf bag out quick. The only other thing I'll say is I have to give some sort of credit to Jason Patrick because apparently how much of a tyrant the director was. Like, it's just like he's a stickler for realism. And like when they were interviewing Sandra Bullock and Jason Patrick, they were like, yeah, you've got like a 10 second clip of us in the water. But what you don't know is that we were in that freezing water for 3 hours, nearly getting hit by boats. Sandra Bullock apparently was inches away from being decapitated by a fucking propeller of a boat. And she said that herself. And at the start of the film, that's actually Jason Patrick driving the fucking motorbike. He went 30 feet in the air and flew off the bike and ended up hanging out of a tree. And Sandra Bullock in an interview was like, Jason should be dead. That's a fact. He should be dead. I don't know how he survived that.
So what happened to his head?
No, it's what happened to his acting career, though.
But in fairness to the director, and we should probably start moving on to our good movies. He did direct the original, as Fergus said, and he also did Minority Report and Twister.
Also nearly killed the cast of Twister as well, apparently.
Real Twister.
No, yeah, that was a real hurricane. No, really quickly before I move off, it was, I can't remember the lead actress's name, but she was doing an interview and she was saying basically, as he said, he loves realism and he had these really, really intense UV lights on them. to simulate something, and it actually burnt their retinas and blinded them for 2 days. And then there's a scene where they're like under like a bridge, and she smacked her head, like I think it was 5 times, and then hit her head again on the last day, and she had to be hospitalized. And he made a comment about like, yeah, it would have been a lot quicker if she wasn't so clumsy. And then she's like, did he say I was clumsy? The man blinded me. He sounds like a maniac.
He's gonna shoot the plane. Nice shot. Let's see if he can hold on now. Follow me.
We'll jump straight to her best film. I feel like we didn't talk about Sandra Bullock at all. We'll move straight to her best film, which has 90%. Who? What? So her best film on Rotten Tomatoes rated was Gravity. I don't know, Buller, if you want to take us off with like a quick synopsis of Gravity.
Sandra Bullock and George Clooney are two astronauts in space and came into trouble, issues with their ship. They wind up floating in space. Spoiler alert, George Clooney floats off to his death, and Sandra Bullock has to kind of fend for herself in obviously an orbit with being in space and trying to get her way back down to Earth. So obviously huge critical acclaim when this film came out 7-8 years ago. Number one on so many top 10 lists. Look, first of all, visually stunning, beautiful film. I think directed by Alfonso Cuarón. I think he did The Revenant as well, I think. But I am not a super big fan of this film. It didn't hit me. Like, saw it in the cinema, which is probably the best way to say it. And I don't want this to sound like I love Sandra Bullock. I don't want this to come out sexist at all. But I feel the film lost a lot of its energy when George Clooney left it. And I feel her character, for whatever reason, in this movie is very irritating. Almost to the point where you can joke that George Clooney was like, "I will take my chances in space. Please leave me alone." The last thing I'll say about it, so I don't have too much else to say about it, and I'll let you guys kind of pick the bones, but is I rewatched George Clooney's death scene today, and I don't know if you guys have had a chance to watch it recently. And basically, he dies because they kind of start floating into orbit. A rope attaches around Sandra Bullock's leg. She just about grabs George Clooney, who's holding on to a rope. So they're both holding on to either side of a rope. The rope on Sandra Bullock's leg is coming loose. George Clooney knows. He's like, oh, she doesn't have time to pull me back in. I'm going to sacrifice myself. But they talk for like a minute. So it's kind of in the time it took to fucking have a conversation about, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. Like, you could have fucking pulled them back in. So it's kind of like, I'm not buying it. But that's my take on Gravity anyway. It's not real. But I will pass over to Gogan. What do you think?
I'd agree with you. My main comment I had down here was, enjoyed it in the cinema, wouldn't rush back. Mainly because I just felt I've seen it once and I'm happy to see it. You know, there was nothing that would make me like, oh, that's on TV, I must watch that again. Like, I compare it to the one that Matt Damon's in, The Martian.
Yeah, I like The Martian more now. I think I wouldn't be in a hurry to ever rewatch it, really. I think it's got a lot more character in it, I think.
That's it. It was only on the other night over the Christmas period, and I actually sat down and watched it, and I was like, you know what? That was actually really good. But if this, as I said, if this was on TV, I'd be like, nah, I'll give it a pass. Nothing against her. I think she's fantastic in it. Visually as well. It's a movie made for the cinema. I just think, you know, it's fantastic. But yeah, apart from that, I would not be it would not be in a rush to see it. So like that's my point on it. Very good. I don't know if you have anything more to add.
Yeah, I mean, like not massively that you haven't said. I mean, as Butler pointed out, like visually absolutely stunning. A lot of the budget obviously went into making that look super realistic, in my opinion. I was like, damn, that looks really real. I remember seeing the trailer for it, and the trailer was made up of Sandra Bullock just going, just screaming every 2 minutes. I was like, man, that film looks annoying. I went to the cinema and I watched it, and it was a lot better, obviously. Yeah, George Clooney's death's a bit of a weird one. Also, the other guy that was there, he gets a horrible death. See, you know, they find his body, like he gets like hit by like a fucking space rock in the face, and like they grab his body and there's like a section gone out of his whole head. Like it's like it went through his helmet, through his face. I was like, damn, that's grim. Fucking hell. The idea of getting lost in space, I think, is a terrifying concept. And you get trapped in space and you die in an expanse of nothingness. But yeah, it's a very frantic film. I mean, look, I actually really liked it when it came out. I don't know what the rewatch of it was like, but saw it in the cinema, quite tense, but also really fucking frustrating. I know things are like floating around and, you know, it's not easy to move, but there's all sorts of like, oh, this wrench is just out of my reach. Ugh, just fucking grab it, Jesus! You're gonna die! the space station goes down, the Hubble telescope goes down, the Chinese space station goes down, Facebook goes down in the film, and Sandra Bullock survives. But, I mean, like, it's... Yeah, I thought it was a great film. It's a great blockbuster. If you haven't seen it, like, it's very tense. And, like, as I said, like, the CGI is just, I think, second to none. It's probably one of the best looking films I've ever seen. And it really does give you a sense of, like, ooh, I'd hate for that to happen to me. Like, really enjoyed it. I think Sandra Bullock was great in it. She played it well. George Clooney basically plays George Clooney in the film. Like, through the film, he's making these comments. It's like, you're in love with me, aren't you? Like, just randomly over the radio, like, while she's fixing the ship, it's like, all right,
good luck in Nespresso.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't have that much to say about it. I thought it was great, visually stunning. She was great in it. I mean, I think we all know what, you know, our favorite film of hers is, which has to be Miss Congeniality.
Oh, across the board. I mean, it's, I was surprised that I thought like this would be one where I'd mention like Miss Congeniality and then maybe one of you would like it, but the other person might be like, Miss Congeniality. But, and then even our other friends have liked it as well. It seems to be like an absolute home run of a film.
I absolutely love it.
It really is. There's nothing wrong with it.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's an easy watch. It's a good one to actually watch, sit down with your girlfriend and watch. You know, like it's kind of like, oh, there's nothing on. Do you want to watch this? Happy days. And Michael Caine is excellent in it as well.
Michael Caine's the absolute top part of it. Victor Melling. Like, what a career turn for, like, an English hard man type actor in his films. Like, coming from something like The Italian Job and the likes, to playing a part like this of an LGBTQ+, stylist. That is Victor Melling. He has like some of the best lines in the entire film. There's one where she's walking along in her heels and he's behind her and he's like, my God, the last time I saw a walk that bad was Jurassic Park. Oh, class. And then he's like consoling her about something, or like, you know, she's about to go on stage and he's like trying to give her some words of encouragement. And he's like, you know, I'd like to think that if I ever had a daughter, she'd be something like you. And it's really tender and loving. And then he just goes, it's probably why I never reproduced. Scathing, you cat. But he plays into it so well. It's such a weird like role for him, but I love it.
Fergus, you were saying earlier, like, and we can talk about other films in a bit, like the evolution of Sandra Bullock. I think this was the catalyst, though, because she goes from the damsel in distress to like playing this like tough tomboy. I'm very likable in it as well. So, I mean, maybe get the wrong actress to play that, kind of comes off a bit annoying, but she does it so well. There's a great mix of tenderness coupled with aggression. And I think it's really, She does it very well, and she's very comedic in it. Great comedic timing as well.
You're rooting for her.
Absolutely. My memory of this is, the last time I watched this was myself and my friend Neil Walsh, that you know. Hello, Walsh, if you listen. Were doing a trip around, kind of like, we started in Germany, then went to Cuba and up to Toronto to see you, Ferguson, your brother, and then next stop was Boston. And after just like all this traveling, we got a nice hotel in Boston. One night, Miss Congeniality came on the TV. We had a lot of Pabst Blue Ribbon, and we just sat there and watched like the two Miss Congeniality movies like back to back, and I was like, there's nothing wrong with this, Neil. Don't let society tell you different. This is a great movie, and like I think like you might think, you know, oh, that's a quote unquote chick flick. But it's actually not. Like, I mean, just because a female is the lead in the movie, you don't have to write it off as a chick flick. And I think like we've proven that like a lot of guys like it. Second one is good, not amazing as the first one, but it's definitely more like my girlfriend always tries to get me to watch Legally Blonde, which I think is okay, but
yeah.
I find that to be more vein of a chick flick, whereas Miss Congeniality, I think, is an all-around enjoyable family affair.
Oh, yeah. I think it's great.
Yeah,
and, like, when she finally has the makeover, not that she wasn't attractive beforehand, but, like, when she finally has the makeover and she comes out in that purple dress out on the, I believe it's an airfield, wow. My God. What a beautiful woman Sandra Bullock is. Nicole, if you're listening, I trade you in a heartbeat. Nicole's my girlfriend.
There's another listener gone, Fergus.
She loves Sandra Bullock. She was one of the people that voted for Sandra Bullock to be the next actor of the week. But I would so be... Oh, there you go. I would be killed if I didn't mention... Sorry, Nicole, it's not a very good film. But it's Nicole's favourite Sandra Bullock film. It's called Practical Magic. Have you seen the book? No, never heard of it. I don't know. Maybe I was like, maybe, you know, Butler has a random taste sometimes. You might have seen it on the TV years ago. Basically, two witch sisters are raised by their eccentric aunts in a small town. They face closed-minded prejudice and a curse which threatens to prevent them from ever finding love. Basically, yeah, they're cursed that, you know, they'll never fall in love and be happy. It is Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman. And it's one of Nicole's favorite films. I had to mention it because I had to give it a shout out just for Nicole because she loves it. It's one of those films, you know, like everyone has that kind of film that, like, if you're ever in a bad mood or if you're really hungover, you're like, I need to go back to an old favorite. It's all I can handle right now. You're like, you're massively hungover. You're like, I can't handle that new. I need something I know. So there's a shout out for you, Nicole. I did it. Okay. Get off my back. apart from obviously the obvious Miss Congeniality, is there any other Sandra Bullock films that you favourite?
I like there's one I like, and then I was looking up to see what I got in Rotten Tomatoes. I was like, maybe I shouldn't bring this one up. I don't know if you ever seen The Proposal.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah,
Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds, yeah. Gets 44% on Rotten Tomatoes. I was like, what?
I think that's a great one. That's a great one. Buller, you'd love it.
Yeah, I might watch it. I might watch it. There are two people I both like. So I
watch it with Kira, though. You'd enjoy it with Kira. It's such an easy watch. And she's great in it because, like, she's the bossy character. You know, she's actually Ryan Reynolds' boss. She's so over the top, but...
She's like this powerful CEO and he's her assistant.
She needs a husband because she faces deportation. But that would be my shout out for her. Really enjoy.
Has anyone seen The Blind Side, the one she won the Oscar for? I have not.
I actually haven't seen it. I haven't seen it. And that's pretty terrible that none of us have seen it. It's one that's on the list, I think. If I was to pick one for myself, Demolition Man. Amazing. I fucking love Demolition Man.
Yeah.
Sylvester Stallone, Wesley Snipes. And... I don't remember his name, but what's the cop that's in Miss Congeniality with Sandra Bullock?
Oh my God, yeah.
They're both in those two films together, which is nice. But Demolition Man speaks for itself. It's fucking brilliant. Gogan, I know you love it.
Oh yeah, I actually rewatched it again. I think it's on Netflix.
Is it?
I rewatched it again. That's recently. My streaming bit. Yeah. I was like, this is great. Yeah. It's so corny, but it's just great.
If you haven't seen Demolition Man, please watch it. It's fantastic. It's a great action film, basically. Sylvester Stallone plays a cop in the 90s, and Wesley Snipes is like this mad, evil, bad guy. Also, they're like, you know, arch nemesis. They both get frozen and accidentally unfreeze Simon Phoenix, who is Snipes' character, and then he starts wreaking havoc. They accidentally somehow give him, like, when you're rehabilitated in the future, they give you these kind of like program these things into your mind, like, oh, you're good at this, you're good at that. And somehow they accidentally give him, I won't give away the plot, but he gets these, like, he's unbelievable at martial arts. He's a weapons expert. And then when they're like, oh, we need someone to stop him because he's wreaking havoc. In the future, crime is like zero. There hasn't been a murder since hilarious 2015. It's set in 2032 and there hasn't been, the last murder was 2015. But like, the police basically have these like electric batons. There's been no murders or real crime. Everyone's gone really soft. Simon Phoenix comes in, starts fucking everyone up. They're like, we need an old fashioned cop. So they unfreeze Sylvester Stallone and hijinks ensue. That's all I'll say. Also, there's a virtual sex scene with Sandra Bullock, and it's the closest thing I've ever come to. And you know what? Great.
I want to give two quick shout outs to a good and a bad Sandra Bullock movie. I always forget she's in Crash, which is,
oh yeah,
and a terrible one she's in. And this was also something me and Neil also watched on our North American trip. It was on in Cuba of all places. It's called Premonition. I'm caught the last 45 minutes of it one morning.
Oh, yeah.
And she gets these of premonitions that her husband's gonna die. So it's a stinker, Sandra. I'm sorry.
Mm.
I also like Bird Box. I think that was a decent
watch. Really like Bird Box. That was great.
And we can finish on this one as a collective like, no, thank you. Is that we all aggressively dislike Ocean's 8. I think that's fair enough, is it?
Ocean's 8 was terrible.
Fair to say that.
Just a bad film all around. They made so many Ocean's films, like, why couldn't you have made a completely different film with the same cast? You don't have to make it a continuation of something. You don't have to make it like a cheap, like, Sandra Bullock is like, I think, Danny Ocean's cousin or sister. Or something.
Sister. And yeah,
like,
sister.
It's like, it's so cheap. And then it's like, and you know what? I feel like it's a bit of a kick in the teeth. It's like so anti-feminist as well. It's like, we're going to have you, you know, have a big heist, but it's going to be at the Met Gala because you're women. It's going to be all about fashion and diamonds and blah blah blah, blah. Like, ah, come on. It's a shy film anyway. I actually tried to watch it. It's bollocks, like, it really was. But like, I think Bird Box, well, I think first of all, Sandra Bullock was great in that, and second of all, the last thing I'll say about Bird Box is, and this makes me feel like an old man, by the way, we're all 29 in this podcast. Now we're pushing 30 at this stage, but we're not old. But this made me feel really old, because when Bird Box came out, there was this thing like on Twitter and people were talking about Bird Box. Obviously, it was like a big thing at one stage, the Bird Box challenge and whatnot. And this tweet went viral because a load of younger people in their teens were calling Sandra Bullock an Oscar winner that lady from Bird Box. It's like, oh, that lady bird from Bird Box did this. It's like, that lady from Bird Box, that is Sandra Bullock. How dare you? That's Miss Congeniality. How dare you? Like, the disrespect. And I was like, that made me feel really old. And then I was like, hold on, she's been in films in like the late 2000s. That's just a fucking stupid comment you made. It's nothing to do with my age. I'm not old. I'm going to be young forever.
Well, look, I think I never thought I'd say this, but let's get off Sandra Bullock. Okay, so we're moving on to part three of our podcast today, guys. We have a brand new section. Excited about this. It's our seal of approval, where we won't do this too often because there probably aren't that many films where we all collectively agree across the board. It's just, you know, 10 out of 10. Brilliant movie. But there's one we have in mind to start this off, and we're saying, this is so good. It's currently not available on any streaming service, unfortunately, but this is so good. We're telling you, and you can trust us on this, go out, buy the DVD, buy it in Blu-ray or 4D or whatever if you can, because it's visually a great movie as well. Only the Brave, fantastic film if you haven't seen it. Stop this podcast right now and get on to Only the Brave. It's the story of this department of firefighters in Arizona, based on a true story. We don't want to give too much away on the plot, conscious of we don't want to spoil anything, but it's you know, if we talk too much about this film, we feel that we'll give things away, because the heart of the movie is in the spoilers, so we don't want to do that. But I'll pass it over to Fergus. Tell me your feeling.
Yeah, sorry. I'll give my 2 cents. But I was laughing because I don't know if anyone's going to pick up on that, so I might just say it. It sounded like you said at one stage, Tony the Brave. I don't know if you stumbled into something there, but I was like, who? I don't know. I was trying to hold him. We laughed there. Tony the Brave. He actually lives down the road. Really great guy. As Buller said, we won't talk too much about the film. Did we give a synopsis yet?
Buller went
just roughly a synopsis. Firefighters in Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, look, yeah, the Granite Mountain Hotshots, as they're called. Hotshots, yeah. They're like mountain firefighters, or whatever. And yeah, based on a true story, it's so hard to kind of say things about it without completely ruining the film. As I said, it's based on a real story, like a true story, sorry, and this actually happened. So I would advise, if people are going to watch this film, don't look up the real story, because it ruins that kind of like, oh my God, Jesus, when it happens. Fantastic cast, obviously Josh Brolin, Miles Teller, Jeff Bridges, Jennifer Connelly, Taylor Kitsch, obviously from one of our favorite shows, Friday Night Lights, one of his better ones. I feel like Pearl Taylor has made some poor choices when it comes to film. What's that one, the Disney one he did where he's an alien? John Carter, bad film. He's done a few stinkers, but this is actually an amazing film. But what I say about it is it's emotionally driven. It's fantastically acted. I mean, it's, you know, Oscar-worthy performances from most of the cast. And obviously, you know, you've got forest fires going on the whole time. The effects are second to none. For a film that looked like, you know, it maybe without the fires had a relatively low budget, maybe apart from actually paying the actors and actresses, it looks so realistic. In my opinion, like, you know, the actual fires and the scenes when they're looking across the mountains and it's all on fire and that kind of stuff, it's done so well. It's so realistic. I know, obviously, maybe they used real fire for the close-up scenes, but, you know, with the panning shots and stuff like that, really beautifully shot. Quite a surprising film, in my opinion. Kind of came out of nowhere. Not one we ever would have watched ourselves without, like, kind of one of us or two of us kind of going, maybe this could be good, and then kind of a knock-on effect. But Gogan, your opinion on it? We know it's going to be good.
Well, look,
actually, I hated it.
Yeah, no, without going into obviously the movie itself too much, I think you both kind of described it quite well. There was actually a review I saw online about this, and I think it's perfect. A different kind of movie, which after seeing, you realize that you're glad you saw. I think that sums it up perfect. You know, no, it's not your average movie. You know, we hear this all the time with you know, trailers as well that we've seen based on a true story. This is excellent. It really
is.
Hits the point. And the cast in it, as Ferrick said, some big names. Yeah. Josh Brolin is fantastic in this. Really is fantastic. But follow up with what Ferrick said is take time to watch this. Give yourself the time, sit down, and just be prepared for it. A fantastic, fantastic movie.
Well, but I know you're not a big Miles Teller fan, but would you give him props for this movie?
Oh, like I'm 50-50 with Miles Teller, I think. And to be honest, I think he's the perfect actor to be cast for that role. I think he does a great job and can't fault him in this movie.
Mm. I think you're completely right as well. Like, if I could just, you know, throw in one thing about it, like you were saying, like, there was a great kind of review of it. Like, if you look at Rotten Tomatoes critic consensus of it, I think it really encapsulates what the film is. It says, "Only the Brave's impressive veteran cast and affecting fact-based story adds up to a no-frills drama that's solidly as powerful as the real-life heroes it honors." And I think that's brilliant. It's perfect. Yeah. And it is. It really does. It really does. It just, like we were talking about that film that you had in your trailer, going, like, is this going to do the story any sort of justice? Probably not. This really does. And I feel like it's a fitting tribute to people who are, it sounds very American of me to say, but a fitting tribute to heroes, I suppose.
And it, I think it brings the camaraderie to another level as well. I don't think there's any other film I could think of that makes me want to like be a part of something. If not, at least after I'd watch this, I'd probably be like, God, I'd love to get a few points with the lads right now. If not just to cry and talk about it, but just to, you know, like it's such a good movie. And the director, I was trying to read up on him today because I was like, I wonder who directed this. Cause I never really looked into it. He's the same director that did the movie Oblivion with Matt Damon, which is based on his graphic novel. So he used to be a comic book writer and became a director.
Oh. Did he's doing the new Top Gun.
Is he?
Exactly. Yeah? That's why I want to bring him around to full circle with Miles Turner as well. Just a sum up on Only the Brave. I said earlier, like, this is our seal of approval. Like, just go out and buy it on DVD. I have it on DVD. And no, you can't have it end of it, anyone who emails or messages in. Overall, 1,000% get on it. I think it's a good one for us to pick as well, not to tear our own horns, but not just because it's a great film, but because it definitely shot under the radar. I don't recall seeing it in the cinema. Go, and I think you saw the trailer. You guys watched it before me.
Saw the trailer, yeah.
This is one that I think this will build up steam over the years and get the credit it deserves down the line, another few years, and people start, you know, talking about best action films, best dramatic movies.
It definitely has, because it was either Joe.ie or Entertainment.ie, one of them anyway, had it up, and they were like, maybe like a year or two ago, and it was like one of the best films that has flown under the radar is on RTE2 tonight, and if you haven't seen it, you need to watch it. So there is people that are like, how have you not seen this film?
In my EMT course. Serious burnout. What's he doing here? No, no. Let's find out, shall we?
Brian, right?
It's Brendan.
Right. You're in my EMT class. What's up? You lost or?
Nah, I was just checking out. I heard you guys had some slots available.
Slots are all filled now. Sorry, dude.
All right. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Hey, we got one slot open. You want to interview for it?
Yeah, right now?
Yeah, right now. All right. I'm Eric Marsh, superintendent of Crew 7.
Brendan McDonough.
When was the last time you used? Don't think. Just answer the question.
3 months ago.
You ever use needles?
No. Never.
You have your qualifications?
Yeah. Wildland fire science, and just completed my EMT.
You know the difference between type 2 crew and type 1 IHC?
Yes, sir. Hot shots are on the front line, and they get to engage the fire directly.
Good. You got a record?
Yeah. Felony larceny.
Mm-hmm. You ever do any time?
3 days. And I'm on probation right now.
What are you doing here?
I made a lot of mistakes in my life, and I've done a lot of things that I'm ashamed of, and that I'm embarrassed by, honestly. But I just had a daughter. Her name's Michaela, and I just really want to give her what I never had. If you give me a chance, I won't let you down.
Okay, so our next topic this evening is we're going to talk about the movies you recommended for each other on the last episode. We've got some diverse films here. Gogan got a clanger, I apologise. I got one that surprised me in a few ways. And then Fergus got, I think what he enjoyed. We haven't really spoken about it just yet. I'm a little talked out from only the brave there. So I'm going to, and I've been dying to hear this all week, so I'm just going to pass straight over to Gogan of Nazareth. Please tell me about that.
You've been counting down the days. But look, I don't really know what you're expecting here because, first of all, I hate you. This was this was tough. You've given me some strange movies over the last few weeks and I've struggled to get through some. I don't really know how I got through this because, and I actually wasn't sure what to expect. Like, I know what the story was to tell, but I wasn't sure how they were going to go about telling.
Who is this look, Jesus character?
No, but it depicts the final 12 hours of the life of Jesus on the day of his crucifixion in Jerusalem. Small budget, 30 mil, which I think, is quite small. Directed by Mel Gibson. Jesus, what? No pun intended.
He's a crazy Catholic. Exactly is,
yeah, but in fairness, it's very very gruesome. There's some scenes in it I'm kind of like, you're watching it and kind of like put my hand over my head. There's a whipping scene and it's just like, oh, it's here, Jesus. Like I have to stop doing that.
That's going to keep happening as well. Ah, Jesus.
But yeah, what's the runtime? 127 minutes probably goes on for a bit too long as well. I did think he got the casting quite well. Overall, though, I don't really know how to summarize this movie because it was a dark, gruesome movie. Yeah, I generally can't give you a.
Gogan, I've never actually watched it, so I apologize.
Oh, you hang on.
I wanted you to be my canary down the coal mine for it because I was curious about it. Is it? I've heard things about it. A couple of things I could ask you about it is, first of all, does it come across as anti-Semitic? And secondly, is it just a very fetishized violent film from Mel Gibson?
I'll start with your second point there. Yeah, it's a bit too much. I know what he's trying to obviously get across, and I just think he could have done it without being so gruesome and having so much of that in it. Like, overkill in parts. And I struggled to watch it because it was just, it was a struggle. And I've watched some difficult movies that he's recommended.
What would you get out of 10?
I kind of have to be careful here, don't I? I'd probably give it 6.5. As I said, I think the casting was done quite well. The with the small budget they had, you're not watching it being like, oh, that's done really poorly or something like that. It's the opposite. It just feels like it's too long of a movie. You know, there's time that needs to be taken out of this. And then overall, the gruesome side of it as well is probably where I take points out of it as well. It's like we all know the story. Don't overkill it.
I to be fair, haven't seen the film either. I know, yeah, right. I remember like it came out when we were still in school. And I remember it being such a big thing when we were like 15 because it was apparently so gruesome. It's obviously quite a gruesome thing to happen to someone. So I understand why he maybe went that far with it, but he is a bit of a crazed religious nut in a way. my only reference point of The Passion of Christ and its gruesomeness is from South Park. They went to go watch The Passion of Christ. Do you remember that?
I'm trying to think of the
episode. You'll get it straight away. They go to the cinema to watch The Passion of Christ. And the camera, whatever, it's on them the whole time in the cinema, and all you can hear from the screen is kind of like, yeah, every 2 seconds, and he's like, it's just screaming for like 3 minutes of him in gruesome pain, and I think that obviously, I don't know, puts it into perspective.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. But one point to say is, again, go back to the small budget of 30 mil. This did so well box office-wise. $612 million gross.
That's
unbelievable.
I mean, I think it was slammed as pertained to this religious film. And like, I read like reviews about it and stuff like that. And yeah, it did so well because obviously Christians across the world wanted to see it. But then it was like slammed as blasphemous because it was made into this kind of like gruesome Hollywood blockbuster. And they felt it was blasphemous or whatever. We'll move on. Butler, what was your film that you recommended? Who recommended it to you? And give us a fucking lowdown, please.
Mm-hmm. So, Fergus, you recommended me The Florida Project, which I had heard cool things about, but I'd never seen. So I watched it kind of in two parts there during the week. Basically, the plot synopsis is it's about kind of the homeless kind of living day-to-day in motels in Florida. It's a mother and daughter. They live together. And Willem Dafoe, who's just our boy today, he plays like the moral compass, the very tentative kind of motel manager. So I watched this, and basically the film is shot, it's almost like a documentary. It just follows the summer of these like the young children. They're hanging around the motel and kind of getting up to little schemes, kind of very 21st century little rascal style around the motel and stuff, trying to like pick up a few books here and there. I watched it in two parts, and I was like, yeah, this is an okay film. Like, I don't get the major hype, but this is good. And my main issue with it is that the mother in it, I hated her so much. I just thought, like, this woman has no morals, no values, doesn't look after her children, just has a really bad attitude. She's happy to see, like, she finds it funny that her children spit on cars. She's throwing food around the place. She's causing scenes. She's giving people the finger. I hate this. Now, brilliantly acted. First movie ever for this woman, Bria Venante. Great actress, top performance. So then I watched it, and so I started doing my prep for it then and kind of reading up on it. And it was only kind of reading up on it that made me completely reevaluate looking at the movie. And I watched an interview with the director, and he was like, well, we're trying to like showcase homelessness in this situation, which we don't think has ever done before, like this motel living and kind of how people are treated and stuff. And so it kind of made me start looking at myself kind of like introspectively and kind of thinking like, all right, am I prejudging these people too soon that we all kind of do in society that like, that I'm definitely guilty of, like you see a kind of homeless person come up to you and ask for change, kind of your first assumption is, are they trying to trick me? That's me anyway. I don't know if I'm being completely
Is this because your man stole your money and gave you a blank CD case in New York?
Yes, well, look, that maybe I have scars. But look, I think everyone, I think if anyone says that, they're not, that thought never ever crosses their mind, I think they're a liar. So like, I re-watched this film, and then I kind of like, kind of picked up on thing. Well, not rewatched, but kind of reread it and kind of rewatched scenes. And so she loses her job. She's a stripper, the mother in it, and she loses her job because she refuses to have sex with a client. So she loses her like welfare benefits in America. I was still kind of thinking, like, some kind of use, like, the welfare system in Ireland, for the most part, is good, I think, and there's always money, there's different things, there's child welfare and single parenting, there's a lot. And I kind of read up on it in America, and I saw that, like, you have to work, like, you have to do a certain amount of hours in America to be entitled to welfare, like, you have to do between 25 to 30 hours of work, which I was fucking, it's, like, crazy, like, not everyone can have a job. I think once you show that you're genuinely looking for a job, you should get that money. And it was something that was signed in by Bill Clinton years ago. It was like a basic pull up your boots law that said, like, you know, you have to kind of be more responsible and stuff. And it was and the welfare in America is catered to be like, well, if we do it this way, parents will stick together and like more kids will have like a two-parent family, which I thought was like bullshit as well. So it's like, so you're putting these kids in these horrible forced situations, like, and the parents might not love each other and it's their only way of kind of getting by on money. And sound like horrible situations that the government are putting them through. No wonder so many fucking people are homeless in America. Like, I've been there a bunch of times. Fergus, when we were there doing the road trip, the amount of homeless people you see boggles the mind. And like,
yeah.
I don't think it's president. Like, I've been there for like when Bush was president, Obama, Trump. Doesn't matter what president is, they treat their homeless like shit over there. And it's a really bad team, and it never goes away. And I think like homelessness, poverty, such a knock-on effect to everything else. Poverty creates crime, and crime creates violence, and violence creates guns and murder and chaos, such a spiral from one thing. So just all the stuff started going through my brain from just like the Florida Project, just watching it. I was like, God, this actually is a really good film because it's like opened my eyes to how people live a certain way and how I think we all prejudge people. I wish I was more like Willem Dafoe in this. I wish he just doesn't judge. He just tries to help. And he's such a good man in it. And I was just like, God, I wish I was more like Willem Dafoe. Because I said I'm guilty of just being like, you know, prejudging this woman. And I think she's a victim of the system. And okay, she's got no values and she's got no morals because she was never taught them. Like, and it's probably the same for her parents. And you see her daughter in it, and she's just like a mischievous, rambunctious little kid. She's very funny in it, but you're thinking, in 10 years, she's going to be exactly like her mother. And she's going to be another victim of the system. And she's going to be probably resorting to prostitution, probably have a drug addiction, because no one teaches her any different. And it's just this tragic cycle. I was like, God, this movie's really opened my eyes to stuff and how to look at things differently. And for that, I think it's great. I think Willem Dafoe, so good. The kids are so great, you know, great young acting in it. This was an Oscar nomination for Willem Dafoe. We said last week we think Tom Hardy might be the best actor not win an Oscar. Willem Dafoe nominated 4 times, guys, never won. So he definitely deserves one something. Like, he was nominated for this, but I think that Vincent Van Gogh movie did, and something else. But all around, like, this film has me kind of like still thinking, still spiraling from it. Like, the cinematography in it's great. Overall, the movie's not going to change the world. It's not. But if a movie can change, at least 20 people go see it and 20 people start behaving differently. Maybe those 20 people are a bit more generous and a bit more kind to the homeless and kind of look at things a bit differently. Then the film's achieved its goal and it's made certain people's lives maybe a tiny, tiny bit better. And for that, I commend it as a entertaining piece of film. It's okay. But as a tinker and a film to really chew on for a while after, I think it's amazing.
Yeah. No, I thought
you'd have a very long thesis on it. But
but like that makes sense because like it makes sense because of what kind of film it is. Like, as in, it's as much a social commentary as it is a movie. Do you know what I mean? The movie, as you said, the director made the movie because he's like, this is the real America. This is like what people don't see. This is why the system is broken. This is why people are stuck in this vicious cycle of poverty and this vicious cycle of crime. It's a thinker of a film. I'd recommend for people to watch it. Like, it's like you said, it really is. It feels like a documentary or something, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah. I think I will definitely rewatch it because I want to rewatch it again now with this different mindset. And I think it's going to look like a completely different film for me when I kind of sit down and do it again. It's going to take me a while because it's such a bleak place to go. So, like, we were talking about, we've stayed in motels in America before, Fergus. And, like, to us, like, I always thought they're like a bit of a novelty, like they're a bit of crack. But that's because we have the good fortune to be able to leave them and go somewhere else. And then the next day, if we want to go stay in a nice hotel, we're lucky to have the money and the privilege to do that. But to actually have to live in one continuously. And then maybe, you know, like, you don't have money and you might be out on the street the following week. I mean, it's horrific. And in fairness to the kids don't know any different. And they make the world their oyster of entertainment and stuff. And they're so, obviously, the director I'm putting that juxtaposition of, like, it's so close to Disneyland, the quote-unquote happiest place on earth, where four children. But, like, then, you know, no spoilers, but, like, that plays a part in the film as well. And yeah, no, it really hits home. And I think, I mean, I struggle to think of that many other films that highlight poverty in that way that I've seen.
I don't think there's a film like that kind of that has been released. And like when it was released, like that's why it was and did so well and was nominated for so many awards. And also, yeah, like the cinematography, like you said, is beautiful. Yeah, I don't know. Massive social commentary, but I'll leave it at that. Gogan, to give it a watch at some stage if you ever get a chance.
No, definitely. Like, to be honest, the two of your points that you've raised there sounds like something that I would like to see.
Look, moving off, again, more social commentary from... it was the films we picked. I think that drew this out of us. But I'll move on to the final one, which was picked by the lovely David Goggin, which is Ronin, which is not Ronan. Which is my brother's name. It's R-O-N-I-N. It says that at the start of the film, you know, a Ronin was a samurai. Samurai are basically like knights in terms of Japan. And like when their master died, they became a Ronin, which is like a shameful thing that, you know, your master has died, you didn't protect them, and you're kind of cast out. And they became kind of like cutthroats and like a sword for hire, essentially. I actually went into this mad Google research about like Ronin and samurai. And I'll say that the samurai are like Japan's version of the cowboy, because the samurai, when you actually read up on them and you read articles about them, the Old West, for example, is so romanticized and fluffed up compared to what it was, because a lot of it's word of mouth and these random stories. It's the same thing with the samurai, and it's the same thing with Ronin. So Ronin is starring none other than Robert De Niro. A freelancing former US intelligence agent tries to track down a mysterious package that is wanted by the Irish and the Russians. So as I said, Robert De Niro, you've got Jean Reno, you got Sean Bean, Natasha McElhone, I think that's her name. She is in...
Californication.
Yeah, that's it. Jonathan Pryce. It's a bit of a stat cast. Stellan Skarsgård as well. Overall, I was surprised I hadn't seen this film. I'm pretty sure it's one of those films that's like, it's a great midweek movie. My dad was like, walked in when I was watching. He was like, this is always on the telly. You've never seen this? 1997 or 8, it might be. 98. I enjoyed it overall. It was an interesting one. Like, I feel like the storyline was a bit convoluted and it went a bit nowhere, but the car chase scenes were absolutely phenomenal. They were brilliant. Some of the best I've ever seen, like driving front on into traffic, and they were like 5-10 minutes long as well. Like, they're really long scenes, really well done.
Makes you want to buy an Audi, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%. Or like one of those old BMWs, kind of boxy ones. Just brilliant, brilliant. Like the driving scenes in it in general. Very Italian job when they're kind of going around Milan and the kind of small streets. Or I think it's Nice actually they're in. Like, that was great. That was amazing. But like the plot itself was a bit...
Yeah, kind of comes and goes, doesn't it?
It comes and goes. And I'll say like from the opening scene... This, I wrote it down as well. It was like something that I noticed straight away. I was like, Desperado on tap in 1998? What? I only discovered Desperado in like 2012 in a bottle form, and then they got it on tap here. But I didn't know it was out that long and had been such a thing, but he's in this pub in Paris with Desperado.
See, it's a French beer.
Yeah, it is a French beer. You're right. Yeah, yeah. It is French. No matter how Mexican-ese it sounds.
It sounds.
It is. French beer. I watched it. I quite enjoyed it. I really did. But as I said, look, after the car chases had finished, I think there's another maybe 20 minutes of the film after the kind of final big car chase, I lost interest. I really did. It kind of just went a little bit off on me, and I was like, eh. And I'd say one of the main reasons that happened is because, and this is like a term that I just learned because of the film, is that because it heavily features a MacGuffin. Do you know what a MacGuffin is?
I wouldn't.
Is that like a useless plot device or something like that?
Exactly, Butler. So a MacGuffin is basically something that is used. It could be an item or an event or whatever that is used to advance the plot. But as the film goes on, becomes quite clear that it was irrelevant and you actually kind of forget it was ever there. And that's the briefcase in this. So the briefcase turns out, you never find out what the briefcase is. You kind of forget that they're actually chasing a briefcase at one stage because there's so much backstabbing and there's so much back and forth. And at the end of the film, not to ruin anything, you never find out what the briefcase was, what was ever in it. So it's actually, it was like pegged as one of the biggest MacGuffins. And it's like something that like the phrase was coined by a screenwriter like in the 20s, and then it was like made popular by Hitchcock in the 30s. But like the idea of a MacGuffin has been around for years. Like if we give you an example of like a famous MacGuffin, is like the Holy Grail, for example, is a MacGuffin because, you know, there's this mad story about it. Or like the Maltese Falcon, like you never actually they never actually find it. They never actually get it. You know what I mean? Like, there's this mad thing about King Arthur trying to find the Holy Grail, and then there's nothing really about it after that. Like, so, you know, it's used to advance the plot, but it actually becomes irrelevant eventually. And I think that's why towards the end of the film, like the last 20 minutes, I lost complete interest. Yeah. There was like people shot at a ice rink or some shit. And I was like, ah, you lost me on that. You really did. And Sean Bean doesn't die. I was shocked. I was like, watching the film, I was like, oh, he's dead. He is.
Just gets called out.
Dead as a doornail. Just get called out for being a pure pussy. Like, he's like, you were never in the army. Yeah, throws coffee on him. But look, overall, I actually quite enjoyed the film. I would say I enjoyed the first hour and then maybe patches of the film after that. But then, like as I said, the last 20 minutes lost me. Well, I mean, some random facts about it, I suppose. The driving is so good in it. They did a thing where they had like a right car was like a right-handed wheel drive. And obviously it's left-handed where they were. And basically what they did was to make it look real, they would have like, say, for example, De Niro in the seat and a stuntman in the seat beside him. And he's actually driving the car and it would move the steering wheel on De Niro's side. And all he would have to do was mimic what the wheel was doing. So it made it look like he was driving it. But what I will say is the guy, there was another American in it, Skip Suddeth, I think is his name, is the actor. He plays Larry.
He's the getaway driver.
He demanded that he did all his own driving, and he did. He did all of his own stunt driving through the film, and he's got some great chase scenes in that. One more fact about it, which I thought was quite interesting. In the film, there's three actors who played Bond villains. Sean Bean, Goldeneye, 1995. Yeah. Michael Lonsdale in Moonraker, 1979. Yeah, Michael Lonsdale is the guy who plays the kind of guy who's painting the little figurines in the film. And then Jonathan Pryce, he was in Tomorrow Never Dies. He's the bad guy. Interesting. Three actors, three Bond villains in one film. Overall, decent. I did enjoy the film, but as I said, like it kind of lost its way a little bit. It was just a bit too convoluted.
It's surprising Jean Reno's never been a Bond villain.
Actually, yeah. Has he been in
Bond? Yeah, but Mission Impossible, guys, come on. You can't feature in both.
Are you a big Ronan fan?
Yeah, I'd be a big Ronan fan. I to be honest, I do take the on the points that Fergus says. It does go on for a half an hour too long for me. The car chase scene in it is fucking excellent. You know, he's a boat at it.
Look, I watched the film just for that. Like, it's well worth it. It's great action scenes.
I think Jean Reno and De Niro's chemistry on screen really shows off well in the movie too. To be honest, I like it because there's not a love story in it whatsoever. Yeah, he kisses your one, like, in one scene, but he's never after.
I would say there's a love story, though, because of what happens at the end of it. There's a major love story. I won't give away the complete ending, but there's part at the end in the bar alludes to the fact of romance through the whole film.
Maybe not. All right, yeah, but it's not, like, shoving it in your face like other movies would, I think, as you said, there's a car chase scene in it that probably lasts about 15 minutes. When would you ever get that? You know, and it just looks so real. I made a point off air that we said, I was like, I don't think there's that many car chase scenes that you could say in modern movies now. And what it's meant to say, look real. The car chase scene in this looks real.
Yeah, you know,
Baby Driver.
I don't think it looks real.
This is like intense. Like he's driving, like they're both driving against traffic. And you're like, Jesus, how did he even film that? Because like, if one car swerves out of the way of the first car, surely it would have hit the second car. But it is brilliant. And look, I'll give your one and Jonathan Pryce. I'll give them a 6 out of 10 for their Northern Irish accents. it slips, especially your one. I think is a little bit better than him. She nails it for like a sentence or two and then it completely slips off and she's just like pure English and then like an English person trying to do an accent. And what I will say is the film, which I think is like, it's a deliberate thing with scripting with people who are from the North who aren't from the North. They use the words now and soon way too much. at the end of sentences to highlight, because they're easier words to say. Like Jonathan Pryce's character says four sentences, and at the end of each sentence he says no, and it's just because that's an easy word to do a Northern Ireland accent in, and it's like, yeah, I'm going to tail off with this to distract from the rest of the sentence, if that makes sense. And yeah, I think that's almost like a trick that maybe script writers use.
That's very interesting. Like like filing cabinet in the Birds. Yeah. We have a few managers from Northern Ireland in my job, and we had a meeting a couple of years ago, and the manager was trying to like push the point. Like, you need to keep all your notes and like files. And one guy was just like in a some sort of like a filing cabinet. And man's like, yeah, exactly. But in what? And he's like, just trying to goad him just to say,
yeah, filing cabinet.
Yeah, in a filing cabinet. I think it's at like a 7.7, and I think like maybe like a 79 on Rotten Tomatoes. I think it deserves that. I think maybe like for the car chasing and maybe the first hour of the film, it's a really good film. Honestly, it's like, it's the tail end of the film that ruins it. It goes on too long. It's like 20 minutes to half an hour were completely unnecessary. I think it ruined the film a little bit, but I think it sits nicely at a 7.5 out of 10, around a 77-78%. Some of the best car chases I've ever seen, and critics say it's up there with Bullet, and I believe there's another film, maybe The Italian Job
The French Connection. It's like French Connection, Roland and Bullet are like tied in as like the three best.
Yeah, it's like tied as like the best ones, and you can't take away from it. It was fantastic. So that's all I have to say.
All right, guys, and we're moving on to our next segment on the pod. It's the ever popular fan favorite, our movie of the week. We've been chipping away at making a movie out of thin air each week. We don't do any prep for this part because we think it's way funnier, or not, to kind of just riff on air. We've penciled in Viggo Mortensen as our star detective for this greedy detective movie we're pulling together. We're still working on the title. We've put some stuff hopefully up on Instagram, and you guys will get a good laugh off our terrible titles. But this week, what we want to do is we want to pick the director for our movie, who's going to give us the direction, the voice for this movie. I mean, there's so many out there. I'll jump it straight over to, like, I mean, Gogan, who jumps out of you is like, first of all, like, are there contenders out of just pure funniness? And then who would you like legitimately think is like a good person to actually do a detective movie?
Yeah, see, obviously, yeah, if you're having a laugh here, you know, I'd be like, oh, let's get Jet Li on board, Michael Bay, you know, let's go fucking explosive side of things here. But to be honest, I was kind of trying to think of, yeah, like I presume, as we said before, money isn't an issue here. We can get any director we want. Yeah.
We're trust fund children in a perfect world.
Well, it has to be Scorsese then, doesn't it? From what we've already identified as how we want our movies to go.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or, I hear what you're saying.
You know,
go on.
No, like, I was just going to say, just you look at the type of movies that he has directed in the past. I just feel the kind of the angle that we want to hit at, I don't know, maybe he could guide it in the right way. I know recently The Irishman, I didn't like it whatsoever. Went on way too long. So maybe, is he past his best?
I wouldn't say he's past his best anyway. I mean, look, I mean, if I was to say, I think like there's many hilarious options we could put in, e.g. Jan de Bont, Speed 2, Cruise Control. I would say, in my mind, if we were to go with a director for this film, there's only one that jumps to mind for me, and it's David Fincher.
Yeah, I get you. Seven, Zodiac, Social Network, Justin Mank. So that's a recent 40s movie, you know, highlighting that time period in Hollywood. I have one that I think it's a bit left field.
That's a Mindhunter, Butler.
Yeah, I love that show. I didn't want to think about it. It makes me sad that they cancelled it. I have someone in mind that I think is a bit left field, but I think it could be an interesting one.
because as far as I know, I think they've only directed one movie, but it's a great fucking movie. What about if our director was Mr. Robert De Niro? And I'm thinking of Robert De Niro because he directed A Bronx Tale, and that's a great movie. Ooh. And maybe it's time for him to get back behind the camera.
Okay.
I hear what you're saying. Maybe like a kind of a Clint Eastwood-esque older actor coming back to direct.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying. I just think, like, David Fincher has done so many. Like, obviously, he's done Gone Girl, he's done Seven, Zodiac, Fight Club, The Game, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Panic Room, all kind of crime, mystery, thriller. I don't know. He'd be my pick anyway. I'm picking up what you're putting down, Robert De Niro here, though. I understand what you're saying.
Give the kid a chance.
I mean, I know.
I was just going to say, who directed the first season of True Detective?
Cary Fukunawa, which would be a great pick, actually.
I know we both loved the first season of True Detective. It had that darkness to it that I think we want.
I was even recently reading Matthew McConaughey's autobiography. He said that's like one of the best things he ever did, and he watched that week to week on TV as well, and he still thinks that's the best thing that was ever put on TV, that first season.
Could be a good show.
I think that's a nice dark horse.
That is a good dark horse. This is a difficult one. Look, my vote is for Fincher.
I'm all about, like, probably like progress. Like, Dave Fincher's done a lot in that category, and I'd be up for, like, I think Cary Fukunawa is directing movies now, but I'd be up for giving them obviously to this massive movie, and I'd be all for giving them the chance to kind of hold it. Like, genuinely, if it was a genuine producer right now, and obviously David Fincher is a massive director, well, I'd be like, I look at True Detective and I'd be like, no, I'm happy to give my time to Cary Fukunawa. Plus the fact that you could probably budget them in a little less than Dave Fincher as well, and I think they would do.
He didn't do season two, did he?
No.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. I don't think, sorry, young Robert De Niro, this isn't your big shot to become famous.
That's fair enough. I just thought my people was like, Bronx Tale is such a good movie.
I'm between Fincher and, you say Harry Fukunawa?
Cary.
I thought his name was Harry. Oh, and Harry. Well, look, Harry or Harry or David Fincher. Harry Fukunawa.
Go. Should we put this to a vote with our, like, I would like to go with the director from True Detective.
Say it.
Harry Fukunawa, is it?
It's
actually Cary.
No, I was joking saying Harry.
Oh, for fuck's
sake. Yeah, I was joking. now, look, I'm going to vote for David Fincher, but if you're going to both vote for El Harry, Harry F. Well, look, it's 2-1, so you've got your job, whoever you are. no, I loved season one of True Detective. I was massively disappointed in the second one. Massively.
Third one's good,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I think that's down to Marshmallow Ali.
What's his name?
Ooh, can you remember his name?
Stephen Dorff.
Stephen Dorff. Yeah, Stephen Dorff from Blade. Which I'm glad to see him do well in, because he's been largely a very mediocre B-film career until that. He was great in it, I think.
Gogan, I'm going to drop a massive bomb on you if you didn't notice. Do you know what Cary Fukunawa has done recently?
You know what? You know I don't.
Oh, well. I genuinely thought you were teeing me up for this because...
Is it SWAT?
No. Cary Fukunawa has written and directed No Time to Die, the new James Bond movie.
What? Wow. He's in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we know he's going to be massively expensive now.
Shit.
<True. laughs> And some TV show that's coming out called Master of the Air, an upcoming war drama miniseries based on the actions of the 8th Air Force in the United States Army. Gogan, this person sounds like your kismet, dream. You know.
Oh my god. He has the job. Oh my god.
Also made from the same production company that did Band of Brothers and The Pacific.
Ooh, that's going to be good. All right, look, I'll change my mind. Give him the job. Good job, Harry.
You've advanced to the next round of the Masked Singer, Cary Fukunawa. Well done.
Yeah, the Masked Director. look, we've made our choice.
join us next week, where we'll pick either Femme Fatale or the actor's the detective's name, or what the actual plot will be, or whatever comes to mind, whatever we think is good. But we'll move on to our last segment of the evening, where we recommend movies for each other for the following week, sink our teeth into during this pandemic. I'm picking for Fergus. Fergus is picking for Gogan. Gogan is picking for me. So I'll throw it over to Fergus if you want to give Gogan his movies this week, or his choices, or whatever way you want to present it to him.
I'm just going to... I have three films. I don't know if Gogan has seen them or not. I'm pretty sure he's seen one of them, so I had a backup in there as well. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, give me a number between 1 and 3. And I'm going to give you a synopsis of the film that you land on. If you've seen it, I'll pick a different one. If not, we'll leave it at that. And I'm not going to reveal what the other two are, if that makes sense. So give me a number between 1 and 3.
I'll go for number 3, my lord.
Oh, it is The Grey.
Okay.
Have you seen it? No? No, I'm pretty sure I mentioned this before, maybe off air. It's right up your alley. I know if you're an avid listener, and I know you are, and I know we've definitely got thousands that we haven't even heard of just yet. But Gogan's got a few stinkers over the last while. What did you get? You got you really enjoyed the Charlie Chaplin film. What else have you got? You hated the one that I gave you last time, which was The End of the Tour, which I thought was great. And obviously, End of the Tour, Passion of the Christ. But I think you'll really enjoy this film. Like, I think this film has you written all over it. I love it. Everyone that I know have seen is love it. And it's one of those ones that, like, it's not lowly rated, but it's one of those ones, you know, like IMDb gives it like a 6.8. But, like, it's like, hold on, I'll give you the Rotten Tomatoes score now. Hold on. It's a 6.8 on that, and it's a 79, which, you know what, I think that's fair enough on Rotten Tomatoes. So basically, it stars Liam Neeson. I know you love
Liam Neeson. Off to a great start. Yes, definitely.
Basically, the synopsis is, after their plane crashes in Alaska, 6 oil workers are led by a skilled huntsman to survival, but a pack of merciless wolves haunts their every step. It is brilliant. It's a great film, completely underrated. It's as much of a creature feature as it is an action film. The wolves are this terrifying presence through the whole film. It's like a survival film mixed with an action film. They crash land in this Arctic wasteland in Alaska, like a fucking snowy, icy wasteland in Alaska. They're trying to get back to safety, but there's a pack of wolves hunting them down. There's people injured the whole time. You know, obviously Liam Neeson has a bit of know-how about him, so he's trying to lead people back. But these wolves are just like picking people off and everything. It's like, as much as a creature feature kind of scary as it is a survival film, as it is an action film, and it's great. It's one of those ones that I feel flew under the radar, and I think you are gonna love it. So I've given you a gem this time, I feel.
Yeah. Well, no, to be honest, that sounds good. I'm a big fan of Liam Neeson, so I'm actually looking forward to it. I'm kind of surprised I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's very good.
Because it sounds like something that I would like to watch. So I'll say thank you, Fergus, and I will have the review for you next week.
And I think Kira would like to watch this again as well, because I know she's been giving out that, you know, why won't they recommend films that people actually want to watch?
Yeah, well, she wasn't watching.
I know you live with Kira. No, Gogan lives with his girlfriend, and, you know, unfortunately, Gogan has to find time to watch these films alone because he's been given some stinkers. But I feel like Kira would like this. Nicole loved it as well. It was actually, do you know what? It was Nicole that had recommended this to me. And she was like, it's actually brilliant. So there you go.
I will thank Nicole.
Yours is The Grey. And I'm not going to tell you the other ones because I might recycle them again.
Very good. I don't blame you.
Gogan, if you want to throw me my ones and then I'll round it back to Fergus.
Well, I'm going to do the same thing that Fergus did as well. So I have 3 movies. I do have a backup movie here just in case you've seen the movie that you do get. I'm not going to name the movies. I'm going to give you the genres that they are in. And then I have them randomly numbered, so I'll take a number off you then. Okay, so first one is a sports movie. Second one is an action. And the third one is a sci-fi.
Interesting selection, David. I'm going to go... My gut instinct straight away would be sports movie, because I feel like you can never
on a game show there and a constant pins down.
It sounds like you can never really get a bad sports... I mean, there's bad ones, but for the most part, they will be somewhat entertaining. So my gut is telling me, final answer, 50-50, final friend... Jeremy Clarkson. I'm going to go sports movie.
But Adam, you didn't listen to the rules of the game. I was giving you the genres, but I have them randomly numbered. You have to pick.
Oh, but that's just a cock tease, Gogan.
Exactly.
Cruel.
I have to get you back. So I now know you want the sports one. Will you get it?
All right. So you read them out in random order, yeah?
I did indeed.
Two.
Oh, you got the sports movie, you fucker. Damn it, anyway. It is Coach Carter.
I've seen it.
Fantastic. You get the backup movie, which is another sci-fi movie. It wasn't another sports movie, so it's a lose-lose here for you today, Adam, I'm afraid. It's a movie called Code 8.
Oh, an awful Netflix film, but my memory serves me well.
Well, it gets 79% on Rotten Tomatoes, so it's already off to a good start. It's a 2019-based movie. A desperate young man possessing special powers clashes with a police force after committing a petty crime. Directed by Jeff Chan, and the cast isn't very well known. I love this. I actually thought it's one of the better sci-fi movies that has come out recently. I don't know if you'll like this, though. So that's why I'm kind of happy.
Oh, I know what this is. You'll hate this one.
Oh, is this, am I completely pulling this out in air? Is this a shot handheld camera slot?
No. You know Arrow? It's your man Stephen Amell, the main character, yeah.
Yes, I know him.
Look, I like it. Look, I'm into these kind of sci-fi movies. Don't know if it's going to be your cup of tea, but I am interested to see what you think. So,
well, I'll tackle it with an open mind and see what comes of it.
Very good.
And I do like that it's on Netflix, so that saves me having to track down things.
Yeah. Legally, of
Fergus, course. I'll give your tree, but I'm not going to be sadistic fucking games master like Hogan over. I'm going to give you three categories. One of them's good and two of them are stinkers. So it's up to you to determine place the good one. Your three categories of film are comedy, action, and classic. So you can pick which one you want.
That is so hard because I feel like there's classic is obviously thrown there in, like, as in, like, is it like, oh, it's a classic film, or is it a curveball? Is it to distract me? You said comedy, classic, and what?
Action.
This is a tough one. Oh, I'll go with action.
Okay. It's a film that, do you know what? Straight off the bat, I haven't seen it, but I was coming off... I was up for stuff during the week to really fillet you with, because the way I have it going, I feel bad for constantly giving good and bad ones. You may have seen it, so if you do, I'll believe you and I'll pick something else. It's called Ballistic X versus Sever.
No, that doesn't even sound like the title of a fucking film. Like,
it stars Antonio Banderas, Lucy Liu. A former FBI agent played by Antonio Banderas plays cat and mouse games with a deadly and elusive woman, Lucy Liu, after she kidnaps a child, currently with a 0% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. What I did is, I know how much you hate early 2000 movies, so I went into like the worst movies of 2002, and this came straight away.
I thought you were trying to throw me off by giving me a classic. I was like, either the comedy or the action one are going to be the good film.
No, and I won't even...
You're trying to throw me off with the word.
And I won't even tease you. I'll tell you what the other two were. The comedy was another horrendous film. It was Lightning Jack with Paul Hogan. And classic was actually It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, which I really enjoy. So that would have been your ghetto.
Fuck's
sake.
That
was a lose.
You know what? I was going to pick the classic and I was like, well, like, I thought like the classic was going to be like, all right, he's saying this to throw me off, like some sort of sick game like Hogan did, you pervert. But you got me, Butler. It sounds awful. I like Antonio Banderas and Lucy Liu. I'm a big Kill Bill fan. But that sounds awful. As zero on Rotten Tomatoes. What year
zero, did it? Zero, 2002, I think.
Christ. Did you watch a trailer?
Nope.
Oh, you know what, right? You know, I can already tell, you know, I can deal with a shitty plot line and like, you know, thin characters, but like if the CGI is bad, I'm gonna be raging. And you know what
it looks like. From what I can tell from the pictures I'm looking at, it looks like a horrendous version of Equilibrium.
Oh god.
Oh wow.
But I could be wrong about that. I'm just going off the pictures that are available here on the Google.
I can't wait. I'll watch it tonight.
Very good. Ballistic X versus Sever. Note it down for anyone who's listening.
Yeah, could you send me the name of that? Because it sounds like the worst title since the Jamaica Bay murders, in my opinion.
Whoa.
hey.
Jamaica Bay murders, X versus Sever. Well, look, I think we'll end our long and winding road tonight. We'll be back next week for more Tales from the Movie Crypt. But for now, we'll leave it to as well. Say thank you, guys.
Oh yeah, thank you. And we'll continue on with our. We'll put up a poll about the movie name. Any suggestions other than Jamaica Bay Murders will be greatly accepted.
Greatly appreciated.
So thank you, and good night.
Thanks very much, guys. Talk to you next week.